PLC and others.
We're ready for the petitioner's argument.
May I please report, Mr. Clifford Jackson will present argument for the petition.
Now, may I please report, Guardian Royal Exchange Insurance Limited is an English insurance company headquartered in England, which negotiated with and wrote an insurance policy with an English corporation that had various subsidiaries that did business throughout the world. The insurance policy was negotiated in England, it was written in England, it was paid for in England. All events relating to the matters that are before the court today transpired in England. The record, and I want to say something about the status of the record before this court before I get into the factual discussion. It's simple and it's undisputed. The respondent in their brief at the trial court said, and I'm going to quote from it, the acts of the parties relevant to jurisdiction are not in dispute. That's a brief in the trial court at page 2. This appeal, of course they were the appellate in the trial court, is concerned with incorrect conclusions of law. This court, we are bound by the unchallenged findings of fact of the trial court. So the court today has before it what I consider to be a very simple record which deals with a constitutional issue of law. We're here on 5 points of error. Guardian Royal says that the state of Texas has no in personam jurisdiction over it on the facts of this record. We brought 5 points of error. The first point says there are no minimum contacts. Points 2 through 5 really deal with fairness. And this court must address both issues. That is, does the non-resident defendant have minimum contact with the state of Texas such that the maintenance of the suit against Guardian Royal would not offend the traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. And we say that on the record, which is not disputed, that the answer is no, and that there is no in personam jurisdiction over Guardian Law. A couple of questions first, or a couple of statements first about what the case is not about. We're not dealing with what we have is not a situation where an injured plaintiff has gone unconscious. In the underlying case, the reason we're here today, the plaintiff, Marvin Claypool, and his family, or his heirs, is fully compensated.
If we had such a case, would this be different?
Well, if I don't know, as under the law in this state, I'm not sure we could have such a case, but the answer would be no, because of the facts of this particular context. Just to digress for a moment, English-China play, it's kind of an alphabet soup in this lawsuit, but the facts are really pretty easy. ECC is a parent located in London, England, or St. Austell, England, pardon. Guardian Royal writes a policy insuring ECC and 121 of its subsidiaries located throughout the world, 9 of which are in, quote, the United States, and that's what the endorsement says. It doesn't say Texas. It doesn't say anything, just 9 of which are in the United States. One of these subsidiaries, Southern Clay Products, operates a plant in Gonzales, Texas, that makes organic clay products. There was an explosion and a fire, and a man named Marvin Claypool was burned and he died. And his heirs brought suit against Southern Clay Products and everybody else up the chain. There was a settlement in that lawsuit, and Guardian Royal, my client, in behalf of an insurer, ECLP, which is not Southern Clay Products or any of those other companies, defended, pursuant to a special appearance in behalf of ECLP, and paid about $500,000, about half the settlement. Southern Clay Products and the other respondents before this court, their insurance company, primary company, U.S. Fire, paid about half the sum. So the Claypools and all the heirs were fully compensated. We don't have a situation where the state of Texas has any interest in resolving this dispute. We're not talking about trying to regulate the insurance industry. You're not talking about trying to regulate the activities of a non-resident insurance company who does business with state of Texas. Because Guardian Law does not do business. The facts and the record are clear. It has no, we can go right through the litany. It has no agent, no place of business. It doesn't recruit. It doesn't advertise. It never has. This is not McGee. It is not assumed the policy written by some other company. The entire dispute is between U.S. Fire, who was the primary insurance carrier for Southern Clay and the other people up the chain. That is, Southern Clay operated the plant in Gonzales, Texas. And Guardian Law, about whose policy was primary and whose was excess. Guardian Royal says, and the record is clear, the policy is in the record beginning at page 34, that its policy issued to ECC and its sub, other than ECLT, is an excess policy. They are required to keep in place primary insurance coverage. United States Fire was the primary carrier, we say. United States Fire, after the underlying lawsuit, the Delta was all settled and done, said, no. You, foreign insurance company, Guardian Royal, are the primary carrier. And you've got to pay everything. We don't have to pay anything. Now, how do you resolve that dispute? What evidence, what do you look to try and resolve that question? The only thing that a Texas court can possibly look to is that foreign insurance policy. That policy that was written, negotiated, fully performed in England. All of the witnesses, all of the testimony, all of the evidence will be about what that policy said, and nothing, absolutely nothing about that policy transpired within the state of Texas.
Let me ask you a question, because you're mentioning Marvin Claypool, rings a vague bell with me. Is
yes.
there anything about the underlying facts of this case, the settlement, any of the agreements? I think that may have been a case that the underlying facts were handled in my law office before I became a judge.
Yes.
Is there anything about that causes you any concern at all?
No, sir.
In this case, not an issue one way or the other.
Not at all. It's so far removed from the language. What we're here today is, you know, what transpired in England and what is the language of that insurance policy, which had nothing to do with the case handled by Tommy Jackson. You're on this top side of the book.
Okay.
And that's why we didn't bring this up. It might as well be, it's another proceeding. And I guess that's part of my song and dance. That really the only thing before this court is a subrogation fight between two insurance carriers about what this foreign policy says. The Supreme Court in this Asahi case in 1987, the United States Supreme Court, dealt with the same issue. And in that case, you had a Japanese manufacturer of valves contracted with a Taiwanese manufacturer of tubes, and they sent the valve that goes in a motorcycle tire over to Taiwan. The tires find their way into California. The motorcycle has a wreck. The injured plaintiff sues Honda and a bunch of other people, and you can't tell from the record, but obviously settled with the motorcycle manufacturer. This Taiwanese company brings a third-party action for indemnity against the Japanese company, Asahi, and says, okay, you got to indemnify me because your valve was wrong. And the United States Supreme Court, in a very reasoned analysis, which says basically that you have to carefully analyze the facts of each one of these jurisdiction cases against this constitutional standard, says, one, you don't fit the minimum contacts for the fairness standard, and plus, let's take a look at what's really going on here. What is really going on is we've got an indemnity fight between a Taiwanese company and a Japanese company. And does that belong in the courts of the United States? And the Supreme Court of the United States said no. And that's exactly what this court had before. A fight between U.S. Fire and Maryland domiciliary, Maryland resident, and Guardian Law, and there's not one bit of evidence to suggest anything other than it does not do business in the state of Texas, in this region, about what are the terms of the policy who's primary and who's extra. Not about whether Marvin Clay's doing it bigger than he's paid. Not about whether the state of Texas ought to regulate insurance business. But strictly that. Now the Court of Civil Appeals, now okay, well, Mr. Gunner, if it's that easy, what are we doing here? I mean, the trial court believed that story. And on August 1987, sustained the special appearance. The Court of Civil Appeals reverses, says, well, there is jurisdiction because, and it's important to look at the Court of Civil Appeals opinion. It says, well, one, this endorsement listed 9 of 121 companies in the United States. And two, trying to follow the language of some of these United States Supreme Court cases, there were contacts with the state of Texas. There was business here because, for Christ's sake, look at Southern Clay Products. They're here in Texas. Well, the Court of Civil Appeals got confused because you can't. The Supreme Court has said that the acts of a third party can't bring jurisdiction on somebody else. The acts of Southern Clay and ECC cannot force jurisdiction on Guardian Oil in this context. And the fact that a subsidiary of a parent does business in Texas is not like some of these other jurisdictional cases where you have an automobile or a component part or something introduced into the stream of commerce. In those cases, in the cases cited recently by this court in some of its jurisdictional cases, in those cases, the record is clear that the person over whom jurisdiction was obtained in the state of Texas was marketing its product in the state of Texas, had reasonably expected that it would be hailed into the court, a state of Texas court, because it was trying to profit from that market. In this case, if you look at the policy, it's clear that Guardian Laurel was not profiting from the Texas market, the United States market. There's nothing in here about Texas at all. But it was doing everything it could contractually within the law with an English company to stay out of the United States.
If Guardian had refused to defend, couldn't Claypool have sued Guardian in the state of Texas to require defense?
Well, now, Guardian did defend ECLP. I want to answer that question, but I want to digress just a minute. ECLP is out of this chain between ECC and Southern Clay. There's a primary policy there. ECLP is kind of a defendant for law. So it comes in and does defend. ECLP is named, and our law firm represented ECLP, claiming special appearance and settlement. So it did come in, it did defend, and it did pay.
Could it? But if it hadn't, could ECLP have sued Guardian here to require them to defend in the case?
No, sir. And here's why. Because they would have been saying, well, you have to do this on a policy that was negotiated by ECLP's parent in England, etc. Everything that happened right there was in England. So that there's no nexus with the state of Texas. There is no connection here with the state of Texas. We have to bear in mind, each one of these cases, you've got to look at them on, as the Supreme Court in this worldwide Volkswagen case said in 1980 and then the Saudi said in 1987, you've got to look at each one of these cases on their particular set of facts. And when you do that on this one, and then you look at the background of the law, the constitutional standards, did this defendant do some act that would purposely avail itself of the privileges of the state of Texas? Now, did Guardian Law do that in this instance? We say no, the record is clear that it did not. And the record is undisputed. The respondent, the reason I'm bringing this up, I suppose, if you notice in the respondent's brief, they say that, well, all of a sudden we're injecting all these facts. Well, we're not. They were all before the trial court. They were all agreed, and there was no factual objection raised at the Court of Civil Appeals. Because it's just so clear. I mean, there's just not much to it. But it's an opportunity for this court on a very simple set of facts on constitutional issues to say, look, we're gonna look at who's doing business in our state and who isn't, and we're not going to treat insurance companies differently. It's our position that the Court of Civil Appeals, and they said so, said, well, because Guardian Law is an insurance company, we're going to relax the constitutional standards. because you're an insurance company, you can expect you're going to get sued. Well, that's not the constitutional test. That's not what the United States Constitution confers upon litigants. What the Court of Civil Appeals said is, well, insurance company, I tell you, you don't have to have as many minimum contacts, and it's not so unfair to bring you in here. But on this record, Guardian Royal was not trying to exploit anything, not trying to profit. The Court of Civil Appeals relied on four cases that are discussed at length in the response brief and in action, which says, well, other cases have found that insurance companies are subject to jurisdiction. Well, there's only one that's even reasonably close to the facts in this, and that's that Rossman case out of the Seventh Circuit. And when you analyze Rossman and you analyze this one, there's nothing even close. Because what happened here is an attempt, a conscious, deliberate, contractual attempt by Guardian Law to stay out of the United States, out of Texas, by requiring a primary line, primary insurance coverage, and simply being an excess carrier. Guardian Law would be under, as this court well knows, under no duty to come in and defend. Its duties don't kick in until way on down the line. Whatever happens between Guardian Royal and ECC is determined by that policy and will be determined by a court in England. The burden is on us to show no jurisdiction, and we have done that. Affidavit, apparel laws, in answers to interrogatories, by which there was no objection to relying on those, clearly show exactly what I've been saying. You're not doing business in the state of Texas. We're not asking this court here to say, to somehow change the recent trend of its jurisdictional decisions. Because on this context, this doesn't vary at all with what this court has been doing recently. But it's an opportunity for the court to say, we're not going to discriminate against you because you're an insurance company, and we're going to look at the constitutional requirements for minimum contacts and fair play rather than venturing far afield and saying, well, in this age where everybody's got a car phone and a portable fax, it doesn't hurt for a big insurance company to come in and say that that's in the thing itself. Well, that's not the law. The Constitution is the one that provides the stability to this area. And when you look at the Constitution, it certainly gives people some guidance about what they can expect when they come to Texas and ask for justice. The cases talk about a stream of commerce. And all these cases, the product liability cases and the restatement, talk about 402A, talk about, well, if you introduce a product into the stream of commerce, etc. But when you look at those cases, the way Worldwide and Asahi ask and require that they be looked at, it's easy to say that the Israeli manufacturer of a portion of a dolly trailer that goes on the dirt, I mean, they're marketing their product in the United States. They expect to exploit that market, and that's where it's going, and jurisdiction's okay. But here, when you have foreign insurance carriers negotiating a policy, it doesn't make a difference whether it's in England, Germany, Italy, or wherever around the world, when they do the best they can to confine their disputes within their border, the courts of the United States need to give way to them. And in Asahi, the Supreme Court, now again, this is a dispute between the Japanese valve manufacturer and the Taiwanese tube maker. The Supreme Court said then, what you've got to do is look at matters of international comity. You've got to look at what will happen to other courts or other nations in the event that the United States decided it's going to exercise jurisdiction over all of their contractual disputes, which we don't think they should. This Worldwide Volkswagen case is a pretty instructive case. That's the one where a New York resident buys an automobile from a dealership in New York, gets in it, and is going to move to Arizona and drives the automobile into Oklahoma, has a wreck, and sues the New York dealer in Oklahoma. That's like somebody here in Austin going over here to the Buick dealer, Covert, if that's still the Buick dealer up here, and buying a Buick, gets in and drives to Kentucky and has a wreck in Kentucky and turns around and sues Coal Review Company in Kentucky. Well, of course that's not, I mean, that's not what the Constitution permits. And that's pretty much the situation we've got here. There's just no contact and no nexus with the state of Texas. The Court of Civil Appeals, in trying to employ this stream of commerce, got a little bit confused and decided subsidiaries were something different and an act of Southern Clay Products or ACC could somehow confer jurisdiction over the insurance company, and it could not. What we submit this court ought to do is reverse the decision of the Court of Civil Appeals and take the opportunity to put the record straight on jurisdictional matters when we're dealing with contractual issues of insurance and foreign insurance.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May you please support Mr. Donald Gablett, who will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court. I am here for the respondents, Southern Clay Products, Inc., Gonzales Clay Corporation, English China Clays, Overseas Investment Limited, and English China Clays, PLC.
Counsel, before you get started, let me make the same inquiry that I did of your opposing counsel. Is there anything about any aspect of the separate underlying wrongful death action or the settlement negotiations or anything about whatever Mr. Jacks may or may not have done that is involved in the slightest in this case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
I can't think of anything involved. My colleague, in characterizing the facts to this court, accurately stated the facts insofar as he gave them to you. He did, I think, leave a certain impression of confusion as to what this case is all about. The reason we are here is because Guardian Royal Exchange issued a policy to English China Clays in England, naming as the named insured in the language of the policy, states as if a separate policy of insurance were issued to each, naming as the named insured a Texas corporation, Southern Clay Products, in Gonzales County, Texas. It was doing business in Gonzales. It had buildings. It had an ongoing concern in the state of Texas. We're not dealing with a stream of commerce case or something like that. When Southern Clay Products was sued by Marvin Clay Food, Southern Clay made demand on that policy for GRE to come to Texas to defend or participate in settlement negotiations.
Guardian did not solicit the Texas subsidiary's business.
No, Your Honor, not directly to the Texas subsidiary.
Did the Texas subsidiary solicit Guardian's insurance?
You mean prior to the... No.
And so there was no connection between them prior to all of this that has happened? So.
No, Your Honor, the only connection would be that their parents purchased the policy of insurance from GRE. But the connection we're basing prior to the purchase of the policy, the connection that this lawsuit is based upon, however, is the fact that first off, GRE issued the policy, naming as a named insurer and third-party beneficiary of that contract in Southern Clay Products in Texas. They recognized that Southern Clay Products, along with some other companies, were in the United States. They didn't list the state of Texas specifically in the policy. However, it was anticipated, and we argue that it should reasonably have been anticipated at the time the policy was sold to the parent corporation, that if the subsidiary was sued, if a problem arose in Texas, GRE would have to come to Texas to either defend, participate in the settlement, or to defend itself if it wrongfully refused to honor that contract of insurance, which is what happened here. So while the petitioners have tried to focus this court on the acts that occurred over in England, we don't deny that those acts occurred. But this lawsuit is based upon something different. It's based upon the policy of insurance and the relationship between GRE and the Texas insurers and GRE's wrongful refusal to honor its obligation of the policy. petitioner would have the court believe that the state of Texas did not have any interest in this lawsuit. They would argue and base this argument in large part, if not entirely, on the subrogate status of the United States Fire Insurance Company. We, of course, admit and inform the court that this is a subrogation case. We paid, the Guardian Royal wouldn't come in and honor its obligations under the contract. We went ahead and paid, even though we felt we weren't obligated to. We are now subrogated to the rights of the insurers against Guardian Royal Exchange. However, we are subrogated to their procedural rights as well as their substantive rights. And under the case law in the state of Texas and general law, general common law, the subrogee has the same rights as the subrogor. There is no reason to penalize us. There is no reason to look to anything other than the rights of Southern Clay Products, the Gonzales Corporation against GRE when looking or when considering whether the state of Texas has an interest in this policy.
If the Texas subsidiary had not been listed in a document in connection with the insurance policy, would there be any sufficient contact for jurisdiction here?
Well, I think it would be a harder case to make. Obviously,
I know it would be harder. It would be impossible.
I don't believe it would be impossible. The question is whether GRE, when it sold the policy of insurance, had a reasonable anticipation that it would have to come to Texas. Now, the geographical area that they insured and for which they charged the premium was the entire world. It says it in the policy, the entire world, subsidiaries throughout the world. They had previously, prior to the addendum naming individually each of the subsidiaries, had limited the geographical area that the policy covered to, I believe it was Great Britain and Northern Ireland and perhaps some other limited area. They rescinded that along with the addendum. They blocked that and impliedly then insured the entire world and the whole geographical region. If they had not actually named the Texas Corporation, it would not have been as obvious that they intended to come to the state of Texas. However, this fits into our argument that if this court holds today that GRE, in order to be brought to the state of Texas, suspend its actions under this policy, if the court holds that it doesn't have to come here, essentially, then what it seems that you're saying is that an insurance company, be it domestic or foreign, in order to be brought to Texas, cannot simply list as its geographical area the entire world of the United States of America or several different countries, including the United States. It would have to take every country, would have to list all 50 states. It would have to list every single country in the world, including each of the states in other countries where this requirement might be imposed, perhaps following the United States lead. The expectation that the insurance company is going to list every single possible jurisdiction where it can be brought in or where the companies are doing business is unrealistic. This was the basis basically for the Rossman case that petitioner urged the court. There, the court held that because the policy of insurance was issued to the insured for automobile insurance, the insurer had a reasonable expectation that the automobile would be traveling around, that there were going to be accidents in other cases or in other states. There, it would have been unrealistic to expect the insurance company to list every single state in the union where it might be or where it might expect to provide coverage to the insured. The fact is they listed it in the United States, just like here. That's what most policies do. When they do list the United States, they reasonably expect that they can be brought into every single and each one of those states. If the court holds that they have to list each of the states, what's going to happen is that excess insurers, and that's another point here, the policy of insurance in this case that was issued by Guardian Royal Exchange is a primary policy. It is true that there was a requirement that another primary policy be purchased in the state of Texas. However, It was, in fact, its primary policy. What we are arguing is that because we have excess policy, it is primary to ours, and that the insured, in fact, met the requirements of the English primary policy in purchasing another primary policy in the state of Texas that was underneath ours. The primary carrier paid in its policy limits, and then our excess coverage kicked in. We argue that the other primary policy should have kicked in before us. If they're going to argue that it's an excess policy, which I think is just contrary to the wording of the policy itself, but even if they argue that, we would still have the argument that they should have split. They're both excess policies, and they should have been half and half pro rata share.
But it is your argument that they were a primary, they provided primary coverage?
Yes, sir. And we were excess to them.
Does it make any difference that this is an insurance contract as opposed to contract for sale of goods?
I don't think it does. And what petitioner has argued is that the court unduly penalized the insurance industry, or is trying to penalize the insurance industry. In Asahi and all of the Supreme Court and also Texas Supreme Court cases, what the courts and what I believe this court has looked at is the nature of the obligations under the contract that the foreign defendant entered into. In Asahi, that was a different situation because you had two foreign parties, the plaintiff and the defendant, at least at that point in the lawsuit. The only two defendants remaining and the only two parties in the lawsuit were foreign defendants. It's true that California didn't really have an interest in the indemnification clause that was in that contract, but that is consistent with the court's exercise of jurisdiction in this case. What we have here is a policy of insurance which reasonably anticipates a defense and or settlement negotiation in the state of Texas. The insured was physically located in the state of Texas like any other contract. You look to what the foreign defendant expects to do in signing his contract. In the recent Texas Supreme Court cases, in the Zach Taylor case, the court held that even though a Florida company had only committed itself, this court held that even though a Florida company had only committed itself through a joint venture to provide financing to an Austin construction project, they still could be brought into the state of Texas even though the construction project had never gone through and there had never been a physical contact with the state of Texas. A physical contact is not required. The petitioners keep looking to physical contacts in England, things that England did or the English parties did. It's true, they did have contact. But the gist of the contract that we are arguing here and the gist of the contract that forms the basis for jurisdiction before today is a contract that implies or supports liabilities and responsibilities between an English company and a Texas corporation. Just like in Zach Taylor, the Florida corporation was able to be brought into Texas because of what they reasonably anticipated. Had the contract gone through, which they did sign, but had performance gone through, they anticipated they would have to come into Texas. The hotel would have been built, and they would have had performance in Texas. It's the same thing here. An insurance policy anticipates performance in Texas or in the place where the insured is located. Now, the Rossman case, take that a step further, and it's distinguished in the Court of Appeals ruling. There are a line of cases that hold that where the insurance company issues a policy of insurance to an automobile or an automobile liability policy, the subject of the insurance is mobile enough to go into other states, and they should have anticipated that they could have been brought into these various states. Even though we agree with that and urge that logic and those rulings to the court, we don't feel it's necessary for this court to go that far in reversing or affirming the Court of Appeals decision. Here, you don't have a mobile subject of insurance. You have a corporation in the state of Texas. It wasn't going anywhere. Happily, it wasn't sued in a different form. It was sued in the exact same form, Gonzales County, Texas, that it existed in when the policy was issued and It existed in, when it was named, by name, in that policy. Petitioner has brought up the disputes that we've had in our briefs as to the status of the record on facts. I think the record speaks for itself, but I would just say that what we have said in the past in our appellate briefs is that this isn't a question of fact. It's not, there aren't disputed facts. I don't think you're going to hear any real disputes of fact from either me or my colleague petitioner. What you will find, however, and the dispute of fact that is there, is whether or the intention and the intention that Guardian Rural Exchange had prior to signing the contract. The only evidence before the court, the only probative evidence, and other than self-serving answers to interrogatories, is the insurance contract itself. We just simply urge that the court, as a matter of law, interpret that contract, as the Court of Appeals did, as a matter of law, to find that the court, or rather the GRE, reasonably anticipated to come, that it would come into Texas. I think as a matter of public policy, it also supports the court, public policy also supports the court's decision. If foreign or domestic insurance excess carriers cannot rely on primary insurance policies that are issued by foreign companies, unless those foreign companies explicitly list the state of Texas as a place where they may have to come, and it's not enough that they list an insurer, which most policies do, but they have to exactly list the state and the address and so on, which some do, but they would have to check all the primary policies. You're going to have a problem, it seems to me, with the excess carriers being willing to rely on primary insurance that has been supplied by foreign companies.
Well, whether it's primary or not, of course, is one of the issues that remains.
That's correct.
In the subrogation case. Does it make any difference to the jurisdiction whether it's primary?
I don't. Whether the Guardian Rural Exchange policy is primary?
If it were simply excess coverage, would that make any difference to your jurisdictional argument?
Well, okay, first off, the allegations in the petition for purposes of pleaded jurisdiction are taken as true. They have not proven or shown that the policy, I mean, it's here in the record, so it speaks for itself, but we have alleged that it is a primary policy. As far as whether it affects the jurisdictional procedure, I don't think that it would. If it does, it would be only insofar as the English company took an extra step, which they have argued, basically, took that extra step to avoid coming into the state of Texas. But even under an excess policy, why is it more reasonable to expect that a small claim will be brought against insured than a large claim, where the excess policy has to kick in? If you issue a policy of insurance, even if it is excess, it's still a policy of insurance. I don't care how many policies it has underneath it. It's still a policy of insurance. It's still a commitment to the insurer to come in and participate in settlement negotiations if a claim is brought against the insurer where the excess coverage applies. And this they failed to do in this case.
Maybe you're getting at this, but this is one English company issuing an English policy of insurance to another English company, mm-hmm. the terms of which I suppose are going to be construed in accordance with English law.
What that would probably be construed according to English law.
What is the interest of Texas or the public policy consideration that will be thwarted if we say go resolve your dispute of the English law interpretation of the English policy in England?
The dispute, or the interest of the state of Texas, you have to look at the underlying case that was tried, or not tried, but settled. You had an American citizen, a Texas, a Gonzales County citizen, who was killed. His family sues his employer, along with the parent corporation, of that employer. The state of Texas has an interest in seeing, first off, that the family is compensated. That policy was part of the resources available to that family. Then you have the next step. You have the next resident of the state of Texas being the defendant in that lawsuit, who was Southern Clay Products. The state of Texas has an interest in seeing that Southern Clay Products, as insured, is able to collect on the policy that it has with an English insurance company or any other insurance company. And it doesn't affect the state of Texas's interest that this insurance company is in England or Africa or next door to Oklahoma. It doesn't matter. It's a foreign insurance company, but it's still an insurance company. It's still a contract with a Texas resident. Now, granted, there are some extenuating circumstances, and of course, that's why, probably why we're here today. The physical acts did occur in England, but the relevant relationship was between the Texas insurer and the English company. If the English company had not wanted to come to Texas, all they needed to do was put one sentence in there saying, even though we're insuring all of these insurers, even though we're insuring all of the subsidiaries, we will not go anywhere other than the United Kingdom to settle or to negotiate these claims. Instead, they withdrew the geographical limitations on the policy. They impliedly, in fact, the policy then covers throughout the United, throughout the world.
Well, it's one thing to say what it covers, and it's another thing to say where you'll go to defend it, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor,
and they're two different issues.
I'm not sure. Well, they are, but they are also obligations in the same contract.
They're not going to cover Texas, then this insurance is going to be useless to the English company's subsidiary.
Okay, well, maybe I misworded that. What I meant was they would cover Texas, that they won't come here to settle. You're going to have to go to England to either enforce the contract or to actually negotiate.
We can check this, of course, but is there a choice of law provision or a form of suit provision in the contract in this case?
I do not believe there is, Your Honor, but we're probably anticipating that English law will apply to the contract. As a tort claim, we anticipate that Texas law will apply. So therefore, Texas would have an interest in the tort claim.
Does it provide that the contract is only enforceable in England?
No, Your Honor, it does not. I remember nothing of it indicating anything like that. The petitioner also argued that that what we are trying to do is have third-party actions, the actions of the United States Fire, impose liability, the actions of the U.S. Protection Insurer impose liability, impose jurisdiction on the English company. It's not our act that imposed the liability. We argue that the act that imposed jurisdiction on the English company in the state of Texas was the signature on the policy itself. They agreed to undertake these obligations, and along with that, they had a reasonable expectation that they would have to come to Texas. So I just don't think there's an issue there. They say they did everything to exclude Texas. The fact that they didn't, they expanded their liability. It's obvious that they anticipated that they would have to come to Texas. They would have to go anywhere where these subsidiaries were. If they had done everything they wanted to do or could do to get out of going to Texas, they wouldn't have taken out that limited, well, that is coverage. They would have put in a provision stating they would not go to these foreign countries to defend suits or to sell claims. They didn't do anything of the sort. The question was asked whether ECLP could have brought them to Texas. It's possible that ECLP could have, however, it's not as likely because my understanding is that ECLP was not a Texas resident. Even though ECLP was sued in Texas, they weren't a resident here. It's a far stronger case for a Texas resident who was named in policy to be able to bring GRE in than ECLP. Because ECLP was in the same situation as being a subsidiary, but they weren't, I believe, a Texas resident. So it's a little bit different. There is no relaxation of constitutional standards. We are applying the same due process standards to an insurance contract as to any other contract, but this is not a meandering stream of commerce. This isn't something where a product is let loose in the marketplace and it travels to Alaska. This is a situation where a company stays put and sued exactly where it was when the contract was signed. Nothing's moved, there's nothing to not be foreseen. There's no movement. And there is no relaxation of constitutional standards. This distinguishes this case from Worldwide Volkswagen, the petitioner has argued. Worldwide Volkswagen involved the car moving around in other states, and it wasn't an insurance policy, which is also a distinguishment, but the manufacturer was sued. Now, the manufacturer may not be anticipating that he should be sued in all these different states. The retailer may not anticipate that he should be sued. A retailer here in Austin, it may not be reasonable that he should be sued in Tennessee or whatever that state was that he said. But it's a different case. It's a far different case. Because if the Austin company had gone to another state and had impacted that other state, had gone in and said, okay, here, we'll sell you the car, gone over there, sold a lot of cars, or maybe a specific jurisdiction such as this one, had a more substantial contact with that person in the other state, then they are acting on their own behalf to establish and effect contact with that state, and that's the situation we have here. There is another issue. Well, my time is up. For these reasons, we ask that the Court of Appeals opinion be affirmed by this court and remanded to the trial court for further proceedings.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
I'll be brief. Just a couple of points. While U.S. Fire said, well, if there wasn't insurance, still be the same. The truth of the matter is that if insurance, if there's no jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant, the fact that the contract deals with insurance simply cannot create. That's the law in the state of Texas, and fortunately it's the law in the United States Supreme Court. The Beecham versus Tiffin case out of Texas has specifically said that. It was a colloquy between Justice Heck and my friend Mr. Gebert about, well, how do you sue a foreign insurance company in the state of Texas? Well, the answer is easy. I mean, you look first to see whether that foreign insurance company has the requisite minimum contact with the state of Texas and whether it would be fair to haul that foreign carrier into the state of Texas. And both of those things are absent in this case. Southern Clay Products had no communication of any kind whatsoever with anybody at Guardian Motion. The policy, as I believe Justice Dogan brought out in the question, was negotiated by a parent of Southern Clay Products in England with Guardian Law. Guardian Law did not solicit business in the state of Texas, didn't come to the state of Texas. The affidavit of Harold Law shows that it would not do that, that it would not write insurance for an insurer in the state of Texas. And if you look at the policy, the state of Texas is not mentioned in there anywhere. It just says Paren USA. And then, I thought, kind of my song, I thought an interesting colloquy between Mr. Gavin and the court was about whether it's excess or primary and who and which one's higher. That's all the terms of the policy. That's my argument, that the entire dispute turns on the language of this policy and everything that happened in England. I want to be sure that I made myself clear that ECLP is outside of the chain between ECC and Southern Clay Products. I want to be sure that I've got that point for the court. The policy between GRE and ECLP was a primary policy, but that's not an issue right here before this court. I guess the final point that I want to make It's just pretty much what the court said in the Saki, which says that where the primary market of whoever this foreign defendant is not the United States, then there's no jurisdiction just because you have an incidental contact. And here, I don't even think there's an incidental contact. There is nothing about the state of Texas in any of these contractual documents. Sahi said, and we can quit right here and I will, that the substantial connection must be purposely directed for the state of Texas. What would Guardian Oil have had to do to get paid in the court of the state of Texas? Advertise, solicit premiums, do business with a Texas resident in the traditional sense, all of which is right.
or refused to defend its insurance.
Well, Guardian Laurel did not refuse to defend its insurance.
I know, but should it have, how would you get around to force them to do that?
Well, you have to look at whether it has, whether the contract between Guardian Laurel and whoever this insurer is, we say it did defend its insurance, ECRP, you have to look at it under the traditional contractual standards about whether it, you know, violated the contract in whole or in part within the state of Texas.
If Texas had, by rule or statute, direct action, so that an injured party could sue directly and name the insurer, would Guardian have been subject to jurisdiction in Texas?
I don't believe so. And here's why. Because in various states have direct action statutes. I know Louisiana does, and most states do too. I don't have a, don't quote me on that. I'm not terribly familiar with those other than the cringe when I think of that. But I don't believe so because I still think even with the direct action statute, it'd be the same as the Walmart statute. You've got to analyze about whether that company is doing business within that state. And here, Guardian Laurel had made a direct contact with Southern Clay, say in Louisiana, you know, they communicated back and forth and pay premiums and have agents. Maybe. But that's not the facts of this particular case here.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the business of the court for today. The foregoing payment clauses are submitted on recent oral arguments. The marshal will please adjourn the court.
Yeah,